This week on the show,
it's our top 10 last 10.
With thanks to the Cine Realists.
Hit it, Polly. Welcome to episode 370 of the Countdown Podcast. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. Wayne, what is the top 10 last 10?
The top 10 last 10 is popular with the folks because we just take the last 10 movies we haven't yet discussed that we watched recently.
That's it.
Rank them 1 to 10, son. Gives you an idea what you should, shouldn't watch, or, you know, just bemused by.
Yeah, and look, they're not related in any way, shape, or form. There's no genre, no director, no actor, no theme to
purely
them. It's just, we happen to watch them.
Exactly.
And we haven't spoken about them.
What were our decisions? Were they good? Were they bad? Mostly bad for me. You know how it is.
And yeah, this week, I was about to ask you, mostly bad?
I think it's about 4 when I start recommending things.
It's about me too. Yeah. And I've got some really great films on my list towards the end. So
okay, good.
Stick around for that one, I guess, is the message. And other than that, though, let's just get straight into it, shall we? For a segment that kicks off every show. It's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
To the internet, Robin. What did we hear today, Paul?
Sure, okay. Look, this week, only one bit of news, really. Well, actually, 2 bits of news. The first bit relates to last week's show. The top 10 Touchstone Pictures lists, and we nostalgia boned our way through that one. Mm-hmm. Obviously, now defunct Touchstone Pictures, the adult arm of Disney. Closest vote count in history.
Oh, really?
Well, equal closest, I guess, if you don't count, if you're looking for a winner. I have triumphed 31 votes to 30.
Oh, man.
After you were leading 28 to 22.
These things
happen. The last time I looked at it before this morning, I went, oh, what's going on? Let's find out. Adam Alua said, Wayne almost lost me with Juice Bigger Cunt, male jigger cunt. But he had the prestige higher, so vote for Wayne.
Yeah.
Troy Spinner, who basically always votes for you unless you really upset him, also voted for you again, but he put up the list there. Troy, I'm sorry, I hadn't got around to seeing your pack yet. The pack is coming. Thank you, sir. Jon Snow, aka Julio the Contrarian, said, Wayne has a better top 3, but I just can't get past Juice Bigelow being given any props.
So no one liked that at all?
No. I just heard, Adam Alua gave it to you. It's amazing. This vote came down to maybe 3 films. Juice Bigelow as your number 10.
Yeah.
The Prestige is your number 1.
Yep.
And The Prestige is my number, 8.
Yeah, I remember.
And Starship Troopers is my number 1, which you didn't have on your list. Aaron Dundee said, I'm throwing weight in my vote this week because he put The Prestige where it properly belongs and also let him know he's not the only one who enjoys some Juice Bigelow.
Thank you, my man. I thought I was going nuts.
Chad Fackler said, Paul wins for this week, mostly for the Starship Troopers, and I'm not going with Juice Didn't Blow.
Ah.
In all fairness, the first time I watched Starship Troopers, I was let down because I read the book many times in my youth. It misses a lot of the real story, but it's still a good, fun movie. Thank you for that, sir. Chef Ben Randall. In the Weeds podcast said, not going to lie, Wayne Aruzu had me in the first half of the Rain of Fire.
Yeah, baby.
But Paul came in late with those Starship Troopers.
There you go.
And last one here, Stephen Burns. In what world is Starship Troopers a better movie than Juice Bigelow, colon, male gigolo? Spoiler alert, it's this world, Wayne. And if you don't agree, well, then I guess you can't handle... Sorry.
Oh, God.
You can't suck handle my dick. The truth.
If you put Stephen Burns off, then you are in real trouble, sir. And that was the deciding vote, I guess you could say.
Yes, so. You wouldn't say that. Oh, well, these things happen. Thanks for voting and listening and all that shit, everyone.
Thank you so much for getting back to us with your votes and your rationale for thereof. Now, we have an exciting announcement, Wayne.
Yes.
Which I want to do at this point of the show.
Please.
It is the fact that we have become paid partners with...
Manscaped.
Manscaped.
That's right, fellas. Fellas, you have a moral responsibility to deliver your partner that you love the best dick possible. And I mean the whole package, right? Dick, balls, front bum. You got to enhance the ball aroma and look. And the way to do that is with Manscaped.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
See, you don't want to be like some guys I know who've been married to the same woman for 15 years. And she find out, you know, she never came because she hated your balls for 15 years. You don't want none of that
How
shit.
How do you hate balls?
Hey, I hate balls. Or she might, sometimes you don't like, you know, if the ball is too nasty. It's like, I like balls in general, but I don't like your balls.
I would assume people who enjoy dick would be more concerned about dick than balls. That is like an afterthought.
You know, I've heard from a few people that they enjoy balls. Like, they enjoy men's balls. Like, they'll sit there and, I like the fact that you got these things right here and I can play with them. Well, you know, that kind of thing. I've heard that a couple times.
Benoit balls.
Benoit balls.
I get this tilt around my hand.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. No, I'm sure that's a part of it. Okay. You know, so, and that's the thing, people. So, you want to get your partner that best dick and balls you can possibly give him or her. And the way to do that, go to manscaped.com and pick the lawnmower 4.0.
Performance package.
Performance package, baby. It's got what, Paul? Anti-nick technology, wireless charging. Paul, if I wanted to shave my sack in the shower, could I do it with
you
this?
You absolutely could, because it works underwater.
That's right. And if you hit it now and grab them balls, like beautification kit, you get 20% off, man. 20% off and free delivery.
Free delivery.
By just going.
And you get like a nose and air hair clipper.
Nose, air hair clipper.
You get like a.
You get fucking boxes, man. You get boxes.
We never mentioned that before, but you get boxes.
That's
right. Well.
And you get a little. If you put, take out, there's a bag. There's a fucking like a DOP kit underneath, Manscaped one. And it's a wicked looking one. It's like leather.
Ball spritzer.
Shit. Beautiful ball spritzer, ball deodorant. Forget about it.
Hell yeah.
All and you got
to
do.
Yeah. Well, what do you have to do?
Is when you at the checkout, put in the code CDPC20 at checkout. And you get 20% off.
And thanks to everyone who's already partaking
That's
of this.
That's right.
Who got us to this particular point. We cannot thank you enough.
Send us pictures of your balls.
Send Wayne
Send
pictures
me pictures
of your balls.
Like after the shave, right? I don't see no before and after shit. Your shit looks like a
guy. All right. That is it for this week's recount. Let's get into the 10 films that Wayne and I have both recently seen we haven't talked about on the show on the other side of this.
Hello, everyone. My name is Nick. I'm the host of Nikolai's Kitchen, and I'm also the host of the annual Live Stream for the Cure. Live Stream for the Cure is a charity event where we raise money with content creators and podcast partners from around the world for the Cancer Research Institute, a wonderful nonprofit researching cancer immunotherapy, training the body's immune system to fight all forms of cancer. This is a mission and a future that I truly believe in. And myself and my team worked tirelessly over the past 5 years to raise over $50,000 for this cause. This year, we're aiming for our biggest single goal to date of $20,000, and we cannot do it without your help. Please join us for the event May 19th through the 21st, starting at 9 a.m. Eastern, for 45 hours of content from people all over the world. Together, we can bring hope for a future immune to cancer. The more eyes we reach, the more dollars we raise. Please help us in making this goal a reality. Together, we can make a difference.
Live Stream for the Cure is what we're going to be on in short order. So it's time to really emphasize this. We're only now, if my math serves me, 3 weeks away from doing this. And Wayne and I are going to be the last spot on the show.
That's right.
10 p.m. to midnight on the Saturday night, if you're in the States, that's for 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Australian Western Standard Time on Sunday, the 22nd of May. I hope I got that right.
And this live stream is just
that's our time, 21st of May. Well, we've got two segments. We're going to do one segment, which is the countdown trivia game for the host of the show, another version of that. And we're going to have an hour dedicated to a lot of Wayne. Wayne's never been on the show before. We're both going to be on camera. Wayne is going to give... It's a game show which I and Nick have done for myself. Guess Wayne's score on about 10 to 15 films. And for the first time ever in the history of Live Stream for the Cure and the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast, Wayne is going to do magic.
No, wait.
Live.
Fuck off.
On air.
We haven't talked about, we haven't confirmed that yet, okay? But this magic trick that I have. It's like a fucking 10 out of 10 difficulty, okay? It ain't no fucking bitch little magic. I ain't pulling no cards for you or
Wayne's
nothing.
Doing it.
No, I'm going to see how we go, all right? Because if
well,
we
the
fuck
good
it
dollars
up,
of raising money for the fight against
up,
cancer.
We don't even know.
We don't care. That'll be great.
Hey, we'll see.
So you need to tune in. Make some time in your diaries around that time, 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. on North American time, Eastern Standard Time, and then, as I said, Australian Western Standard Time, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. That's where it's all going to be happening on May 21st/22nd.
I just realized it's live, which means you can't edit out my nasty shit. It's on, right? This is raw, baby. Yeah. It's raw.
It's okay. They'll all be drunk in America.
I'm good with that.
You'll be high here in Australia.
I want everyone to also get high. All right.
All right, then. Without any further ado, then, Lane, let's get into it with your number 10 of the worst film you've seen of late that we haven't spoken about. What is it?
Easy. The film is called Yakuza Apocalypse.
Oh, really?
Oh, fucking hell.
We did this for...
We were doing a vampire show, and I watched this for it because I'm like, I hope this can make it in there. Boy, could it not make it in there. Everyone, this is a 2015 film by a director, Takashi Miike, who is very well known.
As he certainly is.
I actually get him mixed up with the guy who has the best name ever, Beat Takashi. I think that's the coolest name ever, and he's the other Japanese director that's a little like him. Anyway, this film centers on a sect of the Yakuza in Japan and its various idiosyncratic members. The leader is a legendary gangster, but he's secretly a fucking vampire, which means he can cap all his enemies' asses and whatnot. Then there's other fucking weird little Yakuza guys everywhere.
Sounds pretty good.
Yo, I thought at the beginning of this film that this is going to be gangster because, well, wicked, you know, because it's like...
No pun intended.
Exactly. So first 5 seconds, it starts with like this, like, you know, sort of like quote. It says, "There was a time when being a man meant being Yakuza," all right? And then first 5 seconds, dude's walking down the street, other dudes appear, and then there's this massive sudden blade fight, like fucking swords and shit.
Ching.
I'm like, what's up, motherfucker? This is the shit. I'm like, this is wicked. The long-haired dude from the raid is in it, yo.
Long-haired dude, the bad guy?
The one with the mo, yeah, him, yeah. Right? And I'm like, I was like, this is batshit wicked. Like, let's go look for it, right? Then it just turns into shit, everyone. It becomes weird. The big bad guy is a dude in a frog inflatable costume who can somehow do acrobatic martial arts shit and hypnotize motherfuckers in the most cheesy looking way possible. Like, woo, 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 that kind of shit, all right? And there's two Yakuza brothers. Like, there's a priest that comes to town and he looks a bit like Clint Eastwood, Pale Rider. None of it makes sense, bro.
Yeah, well.
It all is completely shit.
Okay,
and
fair.
I'm like...
I've not seen it, but that sounds like Takashi Miike.
So is he known for this weird shit?
Every so often he does a great film. 13 Assassins is...
That's what I've heard from
excellent.
Him.
Blade of the Immortal, I really liked... Quite light as well.
I don't see how these people get work.
And then he does films like Itchy the Killer, and it just doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, this is so, I actually was angry at some stage during the film, going, "Why is it so stupid? And why does it look so cheap? This is shit."
May also have done Audition, but I can't remember that off the top of my head. I think he did.
Takashi Miike.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll check out 13 Assassins, but you know, this does not help. This does not help.
All right, that's not surprising.
Yeah.
In some ways, but also a bit disappointing.
I know, right?
My number 10 is bitterly disappointing.
Hmm.
Do you remember what happened to the erotic thriller, Wayne?
Yes, I do remember them well.
Do you remember how big a fans we were in our youth?
Of course. But your basic instinct, all yours.
Yeah, Basic Instinct and Jade and Body Jade Evidence.
I like Jade.
Some of those films are good, some are not.
Yeah.
Now, fast forward 2022, we're attempting to bring it back with what was on Hulu in the States and Amazon Prime here in Australia, Deep Water.
Deep Water, yes.
Directed by Adrian Lin.
Mm-hmm.
The guy did Fatal Attraction.
Oh.
And Jacob's Ladder.
Okay, wow.
Is back after many years out of the scene.
Yeah, never heard of this
and movie. And this film, I think it's based on a novel, I can't remember, but stars Ben Affleck and Ana de Armas.
I actually wanted to watch this one because of Ben Affleck and Ana de Armas.
It's a massive, massive piece of shit.
Why? What's it about?
Starts with half an intriguing idea, but it doesn't bother to flesh that out in any understandable or acceptable way. So... He's a bit older.
Right.
He's still a good-looking bloke, Ben Affleck. Around about 50.
Sure.
Ana de Armas is much younger. In fact, I think today or yesterday was her 34th birthday.
Do her too.
That's fine.
Yep.
You know, the age difference and whatever else. They've got a kid together.
Sure.
He's a much better dad than she's a mum.
Mm-hmm.
And early in the film basically shows that all she wants to do is fuck other dudes.
Oh. Oh.
Under his watchful eye.
What, is he cuck?
No, not in a like, oh, he's enjoying it kind of jerking off in the corner kind of way, but in a disapproving, he doesn't like this kind of way. And yet it's kind of a hidden secret because his friend's like, yo, she's out the back there talking to some random younger dude who's hot for her. What are you doing about that, mate? She's cool. He's all very cool and whatever. And that's this film to a T. The only person who's reacting emotionally through the whole film is Ana de Armas' character.
What? So his wife says, I want to fuck other dudes and you better be okay with it.
Yep.
And then he facilitates that by just being cool about it or tolerating it.
To the first of these guys that you see in the course of the film, I murdered this other dude who slept with my wife before, so you better be careful. And he says it really casually and whatever.
He says it to the dude who's trying to crack onto it.
Yep.
Yep.
And that dude gets scared off. And she's like, what did you say to him? And starts like thumping him on his massive Batman chest.
Sure, sure.
He's just like,
fuck you.
But no, he doesn't. That's what I'm saying. Never gets emotional about it. He's okay. I said nothing. It's okay.
Really? Really?
It's this really weird film.
That's very unusual.
He's into snails. Why is he into snails? I'm sure it has some significance. I have not been able to piece together, but he grows snails and whatever the equivalent of an insect growing thing is.
Are snails like asexual? Is there a thing like that?
I don't know.
I don't know.
But okay. She's hot for any... Basically, her complaint is he's not passionate enough. He's this really rich dude
who
invented some kind of chip and some kind of drone. Therefore, he's already retired. Yeah. He's in
rich
late
guy with
40s.
A hot wife. These things happen.
Shock horror, right?
Yep.
But it's meant to be like when they do fuck, it's only when she learns that he's done something to protect her or whatever else. And
okay.
And then, okay. Then it's kind of like suggestive nudity without being anything really nudity. And
oh, there's nudity?
Minimal, really.
There, would you say this movie has a titty bonus?
I think you see her breasts for a moment or three.
I just wondering.
But it's not like they're gratuitous. It's not like, again, back in the 90s where the way that shit would play out.
Yeah,
That's not the reason to watch or not watch. This film is fucking awful, and it ends with one of the most infuriatingly shit endings you could possibly imagine.
Is it boring? Because like, I'll be honest with
it's
you.
It's 117 minutes long or 14 minutes long. Boring as fuck.
And see, because that premise is actually kind of interesting to me. So I'm like, okay.
Watch it if you want to watch it. For me... And my wife watched it with me, and we both just sat there like with our face aghast by the end, like a sneer of contempt slash what the disgust, actually. Disgust.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's not even, this is the worst.
That it wasted our time so impressively.
Okay.
So that's Deep Water, number 10, the worst film I've watched that we haven't
spoken about. Thank you for the warning, because you may have saved me a couple hours right there. Okay. My number 9 is a film called Death on the Nile. Have you seen this before?
Yeah, and you know what? It would have been, for me, it would have been my number 7.
Okay.
If I had have ranked it here, so I'm glad I didn't.
All right, so...
I shopped it out at the end.
Yeah. I don't know how these films are, people, because we and Paul went to see Murder on the Orient Express.
Like, I like this one more.
Yeah, I did too. I like this one more too. This is about... It's Kenneth Branagh and Gal Gadot and a bunch of other folks.
Hercule Poirot.
Hercule Poirot. And he's like, you know, the
fuck you with your better French accent.
I'm just making it up. So he's actually Belgian, and he is on an Egyptian vacation aboard a glamorous river steamer with a lot of rich, pretty motherfuckers. And, of course, it turns into a terrifying search for a murderer.
Oh, I don't know if terrifying is the right word.
Well, yeah.
Mysterious search.
Mysterious, somewhat casual search for a murderer.
Well, there's a murderer.
Exactly. Now, here's the thing. One, not a fan of Gal Gadot's hair at all. Don't like that. Not working out for me. I'm just telling you it's shit, right? It's that fucking, that old-timey 1920s look. It just doesn't work.
The whole time I watched this movie, I was going, fucking hell, that would have been pissed off about Armie Hammer.
Oh, I know, right? I know. And that's
they even cut him out of all the promos as much as they humanly could, but he's a big part of this movie.
Oh, no, he's a huge part of this film. And in fact, I think he does a reasonable job.
It's fine.
It's fine, all right? But it's like, okay, so the whole movie, there's a nice opening shot through a World War One trench, so a bit of nice camera angle.
That was
so
good.
It's actually well treated. There's a nightclub scene that goes a bit tad long, a lot of dancing and dialogue.
That's a fucking ever. And also, no, I shouldn't say that's a spoiler.
Well,
we don't do spoilers on Top 10 Last 10, so just to be aware of that. If you're listening to us going, oh shit, I'm talking about if I want to watch, it's okay, we won't
spoil them. But I'll tell you this, there's cheesy sort of graphics, like there's a background image of the
there
pyramids.
There are some absolutely dog shit PS3 level graphics.
That's what, and I was sitting there going, I can't decide if that is supposed to be hokey, as in it was a stylistic choice to make it look like that.
No,
did they fuck it up?
No one says, let's make this look terrible, and so people can go, huh.
Well, Wes Anderson does, but this is hardly that.
No,
right?
Not, but he does it.
He makes it, obviously, he's making it look
in a whimsical
hokey.
Kind of whatever way. Like, it's not meant to be realistic. It's meant to be a someone's version thereof.
But like, you know, Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow. You know how that movie all looks like computer graphics. I remember that. I know people hate that show, but their decision to make it look like fake. Is obvious to me that they tried
because they didn't have the budget to make it look real.
Right, but they still chose to.
But this film looks real in every other sense.
Yeah.
It's a failure on the behalf of the film.
Yeah, probably.
I hoped you wouldn't notice. Yeah, even on whatever 29-inch screen you're watching fucking here, you notice it. Like, on my screen at home, I'm like, oh my God. And that's not on the cinema screen. Imagine that shit.
Yeah. Exactly. So now that's why I thought, and look, I was like, oh, Russell Brand is acting again. Oh, he's in this. Okay, fine, you know. It's amusing that Annette Bening is doing an English accent, and then the Ab Fab girl is doing like a Yank accent. I think they're trying a thing with that, you know.
Yeah.
But
Jennifer Saunders.
Ultimately, I think that all the performances are so melodramatically played.
Can't remember. Is it Jennifer? Which is the other one? Yeah, it's Jennifer Saunders. Not Dawn French.
No, not the one. No. And then I guess that's also a choice. But I kind of, this is the movie. I can't tell if it's just poor execution or it's them being like acting, sort of trying to be like melodramatic in their acting.
It feels very much like a stage play. This. Feel.
Yes, that's what. Good point. And the thing is, this director likes his one shots.
Yeah, Kenneth Branagh, I like as a director.
But he does better than this usually, man. Like,
I gave it props because I guessed half of the mystery.
Yeah,
and was I guess a little bit impressed with my and I cared about the outcome.
Yeah.
Especially after a certain death happens, which I was like, oh, fuck, I didn't see that one coming.
They're actually surprised you. So I'm not actually saying it's a horrendous film, but I
obviously liked it more than you, though.
Yeah. Everyone was doing like a crap jobs with their accent and stuff like that. And there's this oddly raunchy dry humping scene with Armie Hammer and Gal Gadot. And I was like, at the end of the film, I'm going, all right, well, I appreciate you trying to give us a somewhat satisfying conclusion, but they're ignoring that there's a whole crew of another 11 people on this boat, and none of them get interviewed, and none of them are even considered as a you know.
Yeah, that's like a good point.
Yeah, so I'm sitting there going, yeah, I did like this better than the other one, but I hated the other one. So I don't hate the other one. I did dislike it.
Well, Wayne, your number 9 is way better than my number 9.
Bring it on.
Which is a massive piece of shit Netflix film, shock horror.
Uh-oh.
It's my number 8. From Judd Apatow.
Yep, it's my number 8.
Oh, there's no way Death on Isle is worse than The Bubble.
You reckon?
No way.
All right, let's talk about it.
In my opinion.
Tell me about The Bubble.
The Bubble is about as funny as being trapped in a single location with a bunch of narcissists, which is ironically exactly what the film is about.
Yes. They're shooting a film, Paul, is that right?
Yeah, they're shooting like the 6th or 7th film in a piece of shit franchise about dinosaurs or whatever the fuck it is. And it's obviously a loose shot at the fact that mainstream Hollywood is fucking dumb.
Yeah, it's like a Fast Five kind of.
And that's the thing. This is meant to be a satire, but unfortunately the humor never reaches the level that it needs to reach.
Well, now it's important to mention that the point of this film is that they're shooting during the onset of coronavirus. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they're all in this bubble in London in some house. And some set and whatever, right? So all of those problems are there. Now,
I'm going to give one spoiler.
Yeah.
Which summarizes my entire problem. No, the entire problem here is it's not funny enough. It's not even close to funny enough. There's one or maybe two chuckles in this film.
Mm-hmm.
But oh my God, they belabor the jokes and hope to hell that you will find them funny eventually.
This is what Judd Apatow does now. He outstays his welcome. Because when I saw this film, I thought...
I'd even give you the warning from memory.
You had, and then I was like, oh shit, because I've really been focused on that. And then I thought, oh, maybe it'll be Paul told me it was crap.
Don't like comedies, fuck him.
Or like you had lowered my expectations and now I can enjoy it.
Yep, yep, yep.
So I start with this raining montage of actors stunts bit. Like that's in the beginning, that's not too bad. There's one of the characters is a TikToker, so she does a TikTok dance, right? Now the first
that's the high point of the
film. That was awesome, wasn't it?
Were they all dancing?
Yeah, they're all dancing was really funny and good.
Mario literally says, "The Bubble reaches creative heights when it's presenting a dancing TikTok on screen."
Because that was funny. Because David Duchovny and fucking like Leslie Mann and all that.
They're all moving well.
They're all good.
Except the lead TikToker is, of course, Judd Apatow's daughter.
Is that who she is?
Yes.
Where have I seen her before? Because I know who she is.
I don't think you have.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in other words, nepotism once again at its finest.
Oh, yeah, these things happen. But like, I didn't think she did a terrible job. I was like, oh, I buy it. Like, Pedro, like you said Pedro Pascal is the best thing about
it.
He absolutely is. Yep. Him reacting to the crazy concierge woman and stuff is awesome. It's really like, who's trying to fuck him, but not trying to...
Borat 2?
Yes.
That's his daughter.
Oh, is that her?
Yes.
All right, so basically the first half of the film, there's a guy in there who's like a stagehand and he's talking about, you guys can't fuck each other, but I suggest you make sweet eyes at each other. And it looks like this. And he does this really good comedic performance of that.
Is that the part where he goes, and then eventually he's Benedict Cumberbatch? Is that the guy's Benedict Cumberbatch?
Yes, that's the guy later on. He turns into that. So those things are good. There are good elements in here. When they take drugs and stuff, it's quite funny. Now, here's what happened, unfortunately.
I reckon, comedy guy. I'm interested in your take.
Dude, about halfway, maybe early second act, all right? Because there's like, the funny bits like Leslie Mann skating and stuff like that is cool. And there's a dude like, why don't you harmony ignite your asshole and shit like that. It's like funny lines. But it just lost its way. Like it's just somewhere near the end of the second act, I started to go, this is going on too long. Oh, they're stretching things out too long. And then it seems like random shit was happening. Like James McAvoy turns up for like half a scene. I'm like, what the fuck? And then...
there's moments in this film where we're meant to believe, and this is the spoiler I was alluding to earlier, so if you really want to watch The Bubble and you haven't yet, please skip forward 30 seconds.
Yeah.
They shoot an actress's fingers off.
Hand almost. Like your hand is blown off.
Fuck off. This is ridiculous.
That's not funny.
That's like we've gone so far outside the realms of what works in this movie.
It was so bizarre. Yeah. Where it's like boom. And you're like, fuck, that really happened. Yep. Ah, and then you're like, is this funny anymore? What am I supposed to do with this? I thought it was going to be a dream sequence, but it wasn't.
That turns out like it almost makes it into a thriller / horror movie.
It's a moment.
Like it's so badly advised.
And it's gory. It's not like, as if you could play that funnily enough. There's just no way. It's weird. It's weird. I did kind of laugh at the David Duchovny and the director fight. That thing was quite funny.
I mean, that could have had some legs in a better movie.
Again, if this movie had been 90 clean minutes, it would have been fine. Fucking Judd Apatow doing a 2-hour comedy film.
Yep.
Can't he just shut up sometime before he outstays his welcome?
Well, it's not as bad as like Funny People, which was 2.5 hours from
See,
memory.
See, again, funny. This is the Judd Apatow thing. Funny People. I will go back. I actually showed the sequence where Eric Banner is telling about AFL. Right? Like, nah, I hate that cunt. That fucker's here. That fucker's here. That's so funny.
Yeah, it's good.
And it's like this sort of 4 minutes in a fucking 2.5 hour, 3 hour
film. But do you think he wrote that? Or do you think Eric Banner said, how about I do this?
Oh, there's no way an American's going to write that pucker. Yeah, that's. I reckon it was like, Eric Banner, just give me something. And he said, this will be funny. That shit is the best part of the film. Right? And that's the other thing. Funny People has like 5 excellent bits. And then the rest of it is 3 hours of fucking whatever. The
Bubble
right?
has fuck all excellent bits.
Bubble's got about, I don't know, there's two. I actually went
all
back.
All involving Pedro Pascal.
True. I went back and watched the TikTok dance again because I liked it and so much. Too, yeah. So,
but he's in that. So.
That's it. But look, you can't do a 2 hour comedy. Judd, you can't. Yeah. Okay? It's just, it's not that kind of show.
I said, terrible film. So it's your 8, my 9. Awful.
Nice. So okay. What's your number 8?
My number 8 is a film I'm really disappointed by because I love Tom Hanks.
Who doesn't?
I know. If you don't like Tom Hanks, and I know he's been in Forrest Gump, which is one of my least favorite films ever. But
yeah, but it's still Tom Hanks.
But this is a film called Finch.
I heard about this film. Tell me
Apple
about it.
Apple TV Plus basically follows one human through the course of the whole film. It's directed by Mikhail Sapochnik, okay. who directed a bunch of the Game of Thrones episodes, including okay. the Big Battle of the Bastards episode from memory.
Ooh.
Effectively, this is Wall-E for humans, except he's got a dog. And he creates a robot because he knows he's going to die in this post-apocalyptic world,
yeah.
right, where most humans have died off because of whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's dying, so he wants to create this robot to look after the dog after he's gone.
Ah.
And he's teaching the robot basically how to be a sentient, decent being, if I can put it that way.
Interesting idea.
Except it's fucking boring yeah. and almost 2 hours long. And... It's an absolute fucking downer. This movie.
Really?
I'm sorry. There's no way around talking it's just, about it.
Really?
The film makes no bones that Tom Hanks' character is dying. Whatever it is, nuclear radiation or whatever it is, they do allude to it at one point. I've forgotten I was that bored in this movie.
Bloody hell.
And Caleb Landry Jones plays the voice of the robot. And then there's a dog. It's just the three of them. The whole fucking film.
But like that can be good if someone writes it well. Or executes
yeah,
it well.
But it's not. It's not well yeah. done at all. It's really painfully boring and... And then when you think maybe it's going to lift up into something else, it just kind of teases you and then, nope,
do
pulls
you think,
away.
Do you think that this is the type of project that gets greenlit during a COVID? It's like, hey,
yeah.
I got 2.5 actors over here.
It's a really good explanation, you know what I mean? Actually, because it would have been really easy to shoot this one with bugger all people in it.
And someone would have said to Tom Hanks, hey, mate, have you got like yeah, sort
this
of...
This is
you
safe
know,
after you've had... Well, he's already had COVID.
Yeah, he already had COVID. It's like, come to this thing and you can just do this. And is it a lot of CGI, I'm guessing?
Well, yeah, the robot's all CGI. Okay,
so there you go. See, yeah. So they can just...
I assume that was Caleb Landry Jones. He's the redhead dude from like Three Billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that guy. Yep.
So then, it's, yeah, so it's just let's shoot these two guys in the yep. warehouse for fucking 6
yep.
weeks. Yeah.
That's it. So that explains why it was made, but unfortunately it's not a good film and those who are suggesting it is are just completely...
Full of shit?
Yeah, okay. To my mind. It is so slow, it is so boring and yes, we get the point made in the first 30 minutes. I didn't need the next hour and a half.
That's the problem. That's the problem. If you get it and they keep going, now they're... Yeah, okay.
All three of these films are terrible. Thankfully I'm moving on to better fare after this. But anyway, you're number 7.
Surprisingly, I can't say that I'm the same because... My number 7 is a film that I expected to like because I like this director. It's The French Dispatch.
I like this movie.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay, let me tell you about this. Now, the French.
Where's Anderson?
Where's Anderson, yes. A love letter to journalists set in the outpost of this American newspaper.
I think you found the reason why I liked it.
Yes, that's what's happened. Okay, it's in the fictional 20th century French city that brings to life this collection of stories published in a publication called The French Dispatch. And that's what it is. Now, first of all, people, it is shot in 4:3, okay? Or whatever, like that. It's not a widescreen film.
4:3, except in whatever sequences where it's not 4:3.
Oh, is it? I didn't notice that.
Wasn't there a bunch of scenes where it's back to contemporary and we're talking about it? I can't remember for sure.
Not that I noticed.
Maybe I'm making that up. Sorry.
No, you could be right. But anyway... Look, so in the beginning, it's like so quirky. Sure, it's exactly what I came
Wes
for.
Anderson.
Wes Anderson. I came for quirky, so good.
And why hates quirky normally?
Well, I just hate the word quirky. I like the action. When it's done well, it's done well, right? So I do love how it's filmed. Concise elements of the frame are designed to make you feel good, and for the frame to look. I was watching it and going, weirdly, it looks like each frame he's going for like a life drawing or a painting or something. It's almost like this scene, every shot that he has, is meant to look like a page from a children's book.
Why? If you like Wes Anderson, how could you not? This is the most Wes Anderson of all Wes Anderson films.
For me, his best work is The Grand Budapest Hotel.
That's excellent. That's definitely a better film than this. So I'll tell you what, agree, but they are the same.
The Grand Budapest Hotel is much more grand DNA. In its approach. Like, and it's actually, it looks, it actually, but the whole thing is a story. The whole thing is entertaining me the whole time. My favorite thing about Wes, I don't know if my favorite thing about Wes Anderson, but what I like about him is he's doing all this twee stuff, but then he'll have like, like there's a bit in Tilda Swinton says, oh, this guy used to fuck me and shit. Like, you know, they'll just drop F bombs and harsh little things in there to make it a little bit more edgy, and that's what I like. Okay.
Oh, you like that?
I like that. I like that a lot. And so, and the 4:3 aspect ratio only makes it look more like a children's book page. That's what I like about it. So these are the things I love about the show. Okay. Right?
Now, so what didn't work for you then?
Well, it wasn't the fact that I got a titty bonus and didn't expect it. I stand resolute, mother. That James Bond girl being all naked and shit. I'm like, oh damn! Like, Flash, and Flash Thompson, isn't it from Spider-Man? That motherfucker got another role. Well done.
is that Joe?
No, you're thinking of the original Spider-Man, latest Spider-Man.
Sorry. Yeah, that guy. The dweeby dude.
That guy. Yes. When I say penis, you say Parker. Yeah, that guy. But here's what got me, and all that stuff is excellent. But now I'm sitting here going about halfway through, and I'm like, I don't really know what's going on. I was sitting there going, I don't have a whole idea here. And late in the second act, it starts to get kind of really obtuse for me. I just sitting there going, I don't know why, but
there's three stories.
There is three stories.
Well, plus Owen Wilson's travelogue early on.
Yeah, and I was happy to see Owen Wilson again because I do like his Wes Anderson work.
What?
Right? Wow. Well, the only
Wes Anderson?
No. Yeah, who's Woody? Who's the director?
Wes Anderson.
No, the other
Woody Allen.
Woody Allen. All right. So that was Midnight in Paris. When Owen Wilson is in that, that's the thing that made that movie good for me. So I like him. Yeah. Anyway, I just remember checking out of the film. Like, I was sitting there going, it didn't get me, and I didn't like it.
It's funny. I'm now on board with Wes Anderson. I like Grand Budapest Hotel. Turned me around on him.
Yeah, yeah. No,
Bottle Rocket. It lost me after whatever.
Bottle Rocket is not representative of his work. We loved it when we saw it as kids.
Grand Budapest Hotel, great film. Yeah. This film I liked. I'm going to go back and watch The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Do you know? That's one movie I started and never continued, and not because it was bad. I just never got back to it. His shit.
What else? Rushmore.
Rushmore.
Something else I'm missing, I'm sure.
There's the one. Bill Murray one. Yeah. Yeah, I can't say that.
I liked it. And if I...
I'm actually glad you liked it. Yeah. And so it's like, oh, cool. Maybe we'll go see a Wes Anderson movie together.
Yeah. You know? Love to. Would be up for that. All right, cool. My number seven.
What?
Go from Wes Anderson. This is embarrassing. Normally it's the other way.
What?
My number seven is Jackass Forever.
Wait, I've been so curious about this. Because these motherfuckers are all older than us.
I've never seen a Jackass film. I've never watched a Jackass episode.
You see the first one?
I've been exposed to some of their clips and skits on YouTube and whatever else. And occasionally I even chortle at it. But this time I saw the trailer 93,000 times the cinema. That's I never watched it once voluntarily on YouTube or whatever else.
That's right.
And I must admit, I laughed at a couple of sequences. There are so many dicks in this film.
Oh, really?
And I mean penises.
Yeah.
That if you're at all... worried about the penis, don't see this film.
Oh, really?
It is so much in your
face. Wall to wall dicks.
There's no way there's ever been a film released that's not a mainstream porno or even an alternative porno.
That has more dicks than this.
That has more dicks in this movie.
So you're right.
What they're doing in this film is...
I'm sold.
they are acknowledging that we are too old for this shit.
Yeah.
But still doing crazy shit and then... every so often, from what I can tell, linking it back to an earlier skit that they did in one of the previous films or the TV show and showing how much more disastrous the outcome was because they're not young and can't bounce back the way they were. And that's what I responded to in this
film. I agree. I had a sort of interview with Johnny Knoxville after The Bull.
Yep.
Right? Yeah,
exactly.
If you watch it, it's like, oh, Jesus. It was so bad that people didn't cheer after it happened. They just stopped.
No, and that's how you know this must have been serious because they weren't laughing. Because normally, the... immediate response from the rest of the Jackass crew and the director Jeff Tremaine and whatever is just to laugh their asses off.
Yeah,
but this one they're like, ooh,
yeah, and it just stopped. And
that wasn't the only time. There's two or three major injuries in this.
Well, he talked about what he had to all the fucking operations and shit he's had as a result of this. I'm like, this guy's nuts. It's amazing that he's still around.
Yeah,
that's how bad this shit is. So. It's kind of impressive. So you didn't.
But then they're also handing it over to the younger.
Okay, good.
Younger, generally fatter crew.
Fatter.
There's a couple of guys who are so fucking fat.
Well, that is funnier.
And they've brought in one random chick who's idiotic enough to do a couple of stupid things.
Is she doing some nasty shit?
Only a couple. Generally speaking, they reserve her for not doing much.
Yeah, man, you've got to be careful.
Because she's
not
an idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
Although the scene where she does something completely, particularly crazy is idiotic. So,
okay. What do you think of it? Like, do you recommend it?
Well, if you're into Jackass, of course.
Yeah.
If you're not,
Were you amused?
Bemused.
Bemused.
Yeah. There's a couple of scenes here I legitimately did laugh. Mostly where it's that innocuous kind of... It finds that balance between being really painfully over the top, awkward humor, and being genuinely funny that, oh, if that happened, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, okay. Have you seen Bad Grandpa?
Yes.
Okay, so that film is like Borat, where I can't watch it because it's real people reacting to him shitting on a wall.
There's a few scenes of real people in this. A few.
But they're not trying to fool them?
No, they are. Absolutely. Oh, they are. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There's a few of those scenes, but not a lot.
All right.
Mostly it's their own crew, and we're setting them up for X. So I'll give you one spoiler.
Go on.
There's a scene where they're playing, basically, jump into a chair, a random chair. There's four of them, there's four chairs. So what's that game where if you don't jump into the chair quick enough?
Yeah, musical chairs.
Musical chairs. But there is a chair for everyone.
Yeah.
And Johnny Knoxville introduced it by saying, one of these seats has like this huge battering ram, which will basically fling someone way out of the seat.
Bloody hell.
And the other three are all good. And so they go around and they sit three times and he doesn't press the button to operate. Turns out they're all rigged and they all fly off into the air.
Jeez, that's harsh.
But Wee Man, who's a small person.
Yeah, little person. Yep.
He flings a lot higher than everyone else because he's not much of him. And he lands on his head.
Dude, I remember that.
I'm not sure.
This is the thing, though, right? I would probably watch this.
Yes, you should.
If you do nothing, it's like, this might be funny. You know, it's like watching YouTube.
Two and
videos.
A half stars for me. You can't, it's not a high, but did I laugh a few times? Yes. Was I awkward? Yes.
I think that's what it's for.
Did my wife get to see a lot of dicks that can compare against mine? Yes.
That's fine. Yep. That's fine. I know Paul's packing. He fucking plays like he isn't, but I know he is.
No. All right. We'll never have my wife on the show to confirm or deny.
Okay. My number six, everyone.
Which means deny.
Just to clear that up. My number six was recommended to me by someone in the listener community. It's a movie called Fresh. Fresh. Okay. Now, I didn't know what the movie was about, but it turns out, everyone, because ostensibly, it's like, or prima facie, it's a romance drama, what you think, right? About a girl.
Bitch,
you
know, please.
And then she hates the dating game and she runs into Sebastian Stan at a grocery store and he's charming and the Winter Soldier and they have a meet cute and they start dating and that's fine. But then there's this deliberately ominous undertone with the music and everything, even though the vision is seemingly pleasant and nice. And that's what this movie does. It in fact is, I guess, a horror thriller. Not a horror. I don't know what you call it, Paul. Mm. But it's not the romance you think it might be opening to be. And if you know that going in, which you would if you watched the trailer, you know what it is, right?
Okay.
So... on the upside, it's short and it's like pretty tightly acted. I think I was expecting something where everyone says, Wayne, you got to watch this. So I thought it was a rom-com. But then when it turns out to not be one, I'm like, oh, and then it sort of caught me off guard. And I'm like, not great overall, but then again, this isn't my genre. However, now thinking about it after having seen it and thought about it.
Sure.
It's probably a quite comparable, competent like horror film, thriller or whatever you want to call it. It's relatively well made and there's nothing offensive about it.
Okay.
Did you like this? Oh dear, is it coming up?
Neither confirmed nor denied.
Okay, all right, good. All right, good. Let's talk about that. So yes, look, not for me, but I could. I know people who like other than Paul who just like horror films.
Because Paul's not a complete freak on his own.
Oh well, you know, but Paul likes them more than anyone. So like, it's I would actually recommend this to you. Okay, you could probably have a good time with it.
Okay,
because right, I like that girl. She's nice.
Yeah. What was her name again?
Yeah, I wish I had it.
She's in the upcoming movie Where the Crawdads.
Yes, like, and she's English playing an American.
Daisy Edgar Jones.
Daisy Edgar Jones.
It's her name. All right, my number six is a straightforward horror comedy, and it comes with a little bit of weightiness to it because since this film was released, one of the stars of the film died tragically.
In production?
No, after the film was released, yeah. So this is the Foo Fighters film, Studio 666.
Yes!
And Taylor Hawkins, very sadly, of course, passed. As a result, we're still not sure, to be honest.
Paul loves Foo Fighters.
I'm a massive Foo Fighters fan, and I was all up for seeing this film. I can't remember why, but I think we got invited to an advanced screening.
I couldn't make it, yeah.
You couldn't make it, and I couldn't do it for whatever reason. So watch the film, and it's fine.
It's like, fine.
For what it is.
What is the premise?
The premise is basically the Foo Fighters recording their 10th album.
Right.
And they ask their agent to do something sort of different. Let's just go on location somewhere. And they go to a supposedly haunted mansion.
That's right. I think it's when I was out. Yep.
And off they go there. And it turns out there was some sort of demonic rituals that were done there. And Dave Grohl gets taken over by the evil in the place and starts to try to kill his bandmates. And that's the film.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Mixed in with them playing metal kind of music, and none of them are particularly... Dave Grohl's the best of the act of them all in terms
because
of
acting. Because he's a good, funny actor.
He's got some panache.
He's hilarious.
Can I say?
All his music videos.
Yeah, exactly. But all the rest of them, as long as you buy into the fact that these aren't real actors, it's good fun.
Okay. Because if it's a way of you watching the band you like and just interacting with them and seeing what they do, I'm on board.
And they did release the album that came from this film as well. Not as their album, they called it something else. But anyway, it's directed by B.J. McConnell. McDonald, I should say. And it really goes, once like the deaths start happening in the film, it goes the whole hog. Like, they're really, really going hardcore, over-the-top, silly, silly gore.
Yeah.
So if you're at all interested in that, as well as watching the Foo Fighters act,
yeah,
good fun.
Yeah. Basically, if you're a fan of the Foo Fighters, if John Mayer made a movie, I'd go see it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if you're a fan of the Foo Fighters, you're absolutely in. Because the gore is so ridiculous that you can't be offended by it. It's not realistic at all.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's what I thought it would be. So I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm glad. So are you recommending it to a Foo Fighters fan?
Oh, yeah, 100%. If you're Foo Fighters fan, regardless whether you're dark and well, of course you are, but worried about the band now moving forward, watch this film, particularly as a homage to Taylor Hawkins, who gets a good significant portion of the film.
Cool.
Yeah. But regardless of that, great film in terms of a Foo Fighter fan.
Yep.
If you're not a Foo Fighters fan and you watch this film, you would be scratching your head going, what the fuck?
Oh, okay.
Honestly, right. You would be.
Okay, so for Foo Fighter fans, this is your jam.
Yep.
Word. All right, my number five. Everyone, I went and saw West Side Story.
Oh, wow. Did you?
Yeah, I did. Because like it's like Steven Spielberg's latest thing. It was up for an Oscar.
It did, yeah.
Didn't get it.
Best picture.
Best picture. And
won
I'm like...
Best Supporting Actress.
Well, yeah. And I was like, how? How can this story being remade now be an Oscar contender and like...
Because it wasn't that good or...
No, it's just like the idea of... If Steven Spielberg says, I want
to... Five, right?
Yeah. But Steven Spielberg says, I want to remake West Side Story, and you're the studio. It's like, this is the kind of deal you make with Steven Spielberg when he also signs a contract for two other movies that you choose. Like, this is clearly his passion project. So it's a musical, and it is West Side Story, the modern-day Romeo and Juliet. They're in New York, it's street gangs. There's the Upper West Side, and these two gangs, they battle for control of the turf.
Sorry, you mean West Side?
West Side! And obviously, it becomes complicated when the gang members fall in love with a rival's sister. Romeo and Juliet, okay?
Oh my God.
Now, I will tell you this. I didn't know what to think about it walking in, but this is why Steven Spielberg is the shit. It looks like an old film, proper styles, but he puts amazing opening crane shots, literally of a crane, in because it's like an industrial area. And the film itself, the reason people, I think, put it up for an award is it is pure cinematography. Now, the opening... knife fight scene. There's no singing. There's bits, the big chunks of no singing.
Fake fuck.
Yeah, but there is excellent choreography. And here's the thing. You know, LA, what's that fucking, what's the Ryan Gosling one? I smoked it away. The dancing, fucking singing, fucking Ryan Gosling and Emma, La La Land. That was a dancey looking one, right? But it doesn't have the same sensibility as this. This is actually contextual where like, Puerto Ricans are singing and they get yelled at by the police and they get ridiculed by the Jets and they use old timey language, but it does work.
Okay.
And so it's just obvious that Steven Spielberg has massive passion for this material and you can see it in there. If you like the original, you'll probably love this. If you're Paul, you'll hate it.
I won't ever watch it.
I'll tell you this though. Weirdly, there's Spanish speaking parts and there's no subtitles on purpose.
Also annoying.
Yeah, but like they're just, I think they're emoting. So I think this is why, I don't know. It's not groundbreaking. It's just amazingly, amazingly, amazingly done. And that's why it's good. So if you at all like musicals, I think you'd probably actually enjoy watching it.
Makes sense. Makes sense. It's a musical. If you like musicals.
Yeah, it looks like a Technicolor film, but made now. It's weird. Okay. Yeah.
All right. My number six is a horror film, which Wayne did not watch. I watched it with my brother, which was a great night out. It's called X, directed by Ty West, written and directed by he. And this, Wayne, might be what gets you over the line.
Hmm?
It's set in the 70s and follows a small production company who go off to a rural farm to make a full-on porn film.
I knew you'd fucking say some shit like that. Fuck you. By the way, is this six or five?
Five.
Five, yeah.
Did I say five? Did I say six? Six. Six. My apologies. It's meant to be five. Studio 66 was, aptly enough, six.
Word. Okay, so yeah. Porno what? Film somewhere else. What's it called again? X.
All right. Because X gonna give it to you.
That's right. DMX is Paul's favorite rapper, everyone.
Anyway, so, you know, 5-6 characters, the actors, the producer slash director and sound person on the film go to this farm. And I don't want to give it away, but it's an icky kind of really over the top. Like, the first kill is one of the better kills in recent horror film history.
Really?
Really full on.
Gory or just gory hard and harsh?
Yeah, both. Both of the above. And then after that, to my mind at least, it descends into just typical horror trappings where characters haven't been established well enough, do stupid things that keep the plot of the film rolling so that more of them can die.
Yet it's your number
five. But yet people love the fuck out of this because the aesthetic's very good.
Yeah.
Ty West really evokes the era perfectly. You feel like you're in the 70s. So you just spoke about Spielberg West Side Story. I think Ty West does a great job of capturing the same, well, not the same, but
similar.
The era of which
he's
the
making
film
you feel a certain way. That's where the skill is.
Yes.
So that's fair enough.
So that part works. I just wish it had been a little bit smarter in terms of the characters. I wish it had been a little bit cleverer in terms of putting them into.
So the problem is the script?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Because
the farm is owned by a very elderly couple. I'll say that.
Mm-hmm.
And full credit here, I'll say this, it's not a spoiler, I don't think, but if you're just a little bit worried at all about being worried about this film, can you just skip forward again 30 seconds? The female of the owning couple is played by the heroine of the film as well. She plays a dual role.
Oh.
She plays an elderly person in lots of makeup as well as...
Oh, so you don't confuse them.
So, you know, no, but you could tell that
this
person seems a bit younger than she is, but the makeup's still very good, so much so I didn't recognize that she was the heroine, the final
does
girl.
Does that figure into the plot?
Not really. Okay. It's nothing to do with it. It's just
it's just a little device. Yes, it's not a spoiler. It's not a spoiler.
Yeah, well, it would be if you wanted to go in pure. So.
Okay, sure.
So that's 30 seconds. So there we are.
Okay.
So I liked it. 3 stars. Did I love it? No. Do I buy into the huge press about this film? Oh, what an amazing... No, come on. Get back in your box.
Yeah.
You're over-exaggerating. It's fine. And that's all it is.
Cool. Okay, very nice. X. My number four
gonna give it to you.
Gonna give it to you. My number four is a film called The Outfit.
I've been... This is teed up to watch for me.
Yeah, so I'm keen. This has got Mark Rylance. And I watched it because I like Zoe Deutsch, right?
Yep.
But it's got Mark Rylance, Zoe Deutsch, Dylan O'Brien. It's about this English tailor, and he's ended up in Chicago. It's set back in the gangster period, like the 1930s, 20s, 30s.
Oh, so it's really, okay.
It's a period piece. Yep. Period piece. So he's, and he operates his corner tailor shop with his assistant, which is Zoe Deutsch, and he makes these beautiful clothes for the only people around who can afford them, which is gangsters, right?
Yep. So,
and these gangsters actually use his shop as a dead drop, where they'll go in and put an envelope in a thing, and then someone else comes and picks it up, and he just turns a blind eye. So one night, these two killers, who are his clients, they come in, they knock on his door, and like it's like late at night, and one of them's been shot in the torso after some gangster shootout, and they force the tailor at gunpoint to treat the wounds and hide a briefcase, and the story goes from there, right?
Okay, don't spoil anymore. Yeah, good.
And so I like, this is another word where I like the way it's filmed, like the opening shots of the tailor making a suit and narrating the process. It's kind of hypnotic, it's kind of well done, shows you that the character is methodical but gentle, and keeps you interested the entire time, despite being... quite a, I would say, traditionally slow sort of film.
It's a bottle film, right? All in the one sort of space-time.
Very much so. Yep. Like, it's in that shop, all right? But you somehow don't notice that because it's got a couple of rooms or one room in the house. And, yeah, it's kind of cool. It's a solid, tight 90 minutes.
Nice.
Great drama. And I love the character that Zoe is doing. She's like a woman, a young woman, but she's a little smart. I don't know.
Good.
It's really well done.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so The Outfit. Give it a try.
Yep, I'm definitely on that one. My number four, then, is a documentary that I watched not that long ago, which is about the Boondocks Takes director Troy Duffy.
Really? Okay, yeah. Go on. What's it called?
A bloke who did the Boondocks Takes and has done the Boondocks Takes 2, and as far as I'm aware, has directed no other notable feature film.
Yeah.
And in between the Boondocks Takes and the Boondocks Takes 2 was like some 15 years. That's because he is a complete and utter narcissistic cunt.
What? Who is it? What's this film called?
His name's Troy Duffy.
Yeah.
And this is a film that he asked mates of his to make. Film my ascension through Hollywood. Where he honestly believed in the late 90s he was going to be the next Quentin Tarantino.
What?
Where he was slagging off Harvey Weinstein. And we know what a piece of shit that guy is now.
Yeah, but that was...
But back then it was powerful. Like, Shakespeare in Love had just fucking won the most ridiculous Academy Award film of all time. And he's basically to camera frequently throughout this film talking about how amazing he is and how everyone needs to fall into line and suck his dick metaphorically.
What is the name of this film?
It's called Overnight.
Overnight.
Yeah.
So, and it's a doco about this guy.
It's a doco about his, like, he's just been awarded, like, Miramax is giving him money to make the Boondock Saints.
Yeah.
And it's now and he's in a band with his brother and shit, and how he expects the band to go fucking full on out and become like 30 Seconds to Mars with Jared Leto.
Wait, is the way that this doco, the slant that it gives you, is it saying to you, look at this precocious cunt? Or
quite well done. The two guys who made this film who eventually have this massive, you don't really see it on camera, but you can tell it. They fall out with him because he just burns everyone.
Yeah.
Because he thinks he's so good.
He's Trump. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a bit of a Trump or whatever else. He's so narcissistic.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to fall to their knees and genuflect before him.
Yeah.
Because of how amazing he is.
And that's the hook you're watching going, holy shit. Yeah,
you're watching this guy shoot himself in the foot or cut his own nose off to spite his face time and again.
And
it took me a long time to stumble across it and find it, but it's so worth the watch if you can get it as a warning to anyone who gets a little bit of a leg up in any entertainment industry. Mind yourself.
Does it end in a satisfying manner? Or?
Well, just points out, by the time this film ends, because it came out 4 years, I think, after
Boondock Saints,
he's a nobody by the end of this film, a no one.
Yeah. And that's it. I mean, like, that's made it sound really interesting. Overnight, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Overnight. Well, never heard of it, mate. Where did you hear of it?
I don't know about it for a long time. Been watching it for a long time.
Hmm.
Because of this exact reason, like, very few fly on the wall documentaries in Hollywood will give you this sense of what it's really like. But this film really does, from a guy who does everything wrong.
Okay, good.
I would imagine if I, God forbid, was able to sell a script in Hollywood, I'd be genuflecting at producers' feet and certainly studio heads' feet and saying, thank you so much for considering me and my script and what he's just like. And he says this on camera. I am the next big thing. And they all fucking know it. And some of them are telling me that, but the rest of them need to fucking acknowledge it. Like, the band here is secondary because I'm the next big thing and I will get the band to where it needs to be. You just need to trust me.
Imagine saying that.
And fuck Harvey Weinstein. Who the fuck is he? Oh, well, he's the producer or executive or studio behind and it came on to you. No, fuck that. I am the next up-and-comer. I've been in Vanity Fair. I've done this. I'm whatever. He will fucking come to me.
That's amazing.
Harvey Weinstein, obviously, he hears about this shit, just goes, fuck this little cunt.
Yeah, just quashes him, right?
Yep.
This is like, God, just the low self-awareness. Wow. Okay, that would be interesting to watch just on that alone.
Mm.
Okay, my number three film is called All the Old Knives.
Chris Pine.
Chris Pine.
And one of your favorites.
Yes.
Sandaway Newton.
Sandaway. Yes, Tanda's Newtas,
yep.
Who I do not care for, simply because she looks like every auntie I have. Every single one. It's the exact face. And I'm like, ugh. So, yes. So, anyway, this is about, first of all, Chris Pine is the world's probably handsomest man, I think. I'm not sure.
About that.
Who else? Look, if you
George Clu-Clu.
George Clu-Clu is getting on a bit.
You mean right this second?
Yeah, oh, yeah, you're
about
right.
Like a Harry Styles or shit like that.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking Brad Pitt because he's still... Yeah, exactly, but he's like getting it done at this age, man. So, but anyway.
I think it's more his body than his face, though.
You think? Yeah. I think Brad Pitt's got something, man. Anyway, sorry. Side note there on how gay I am.
We are.
This is about the CIA discovers, like, it's about CIA shit, right? And they discover one of their agents leaked information that cost like 100 people their lives years ago. So it's this, like, this veteran operative named Henry Pelham, that's Chris Pine. He's assigned to root out the mole from all of the people he used to work with that had a lot to do with this hijacking where a lot of people died. And he gets reunited with, you know, Tandy Renegan. And it's a spy thriller. So you know I love that shit. But to call it a thriller is a bit much. It's a spy drama.
Okay.
Because a lot of it is really just dialogue. But I love how it looks. Excellent cinematography. It's mostly dialogue being shot, but for that type of filmmaking, it's really top notch. It's very engaging. Okay. The sets.
This has got really bad reviews.
Yeah, I liked it. Tanya Newton really looks like ass. The way it's edited.
Take it back. Would have been Wayne's number one had it starred Jennifer Lawrence.
I tell you. The way it's edited together, very clever. It jumps between Chris Pine interviewing each of the suspects as he's going. So as a viewer, you actually get a more complete and easily understood version of the events, which is a little choppy. So surprising amount of Chris Pine ass shots, if you're into that. If anyone is interested in seeing, basically Chris Pine has the best hair a man could possibly have. Just if you're interested in what you think that I think that looks like, watch this film. Check out his hair. Okay,
spoken like a bald man.
Exactly, a bald man. Chris Pine's hair is almost more handsome than him, which is difficult. So sure. Overall, very solid drama. Type of show that makes you go back to the beginning and rewatch scenes once you've seen that and to see how it plays out.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Is everyone hating this?
I just remember seeing critical reviews saying it was shit. Not good.
Really? Bloody Tandy Newton. So.
I'll have a look to see what the reviews.
I'm sure now people will. Maybe I was just enchanted by how well shot it is. I'll be honest with you. That happens for me.
Tandaway Newton.
Tandaway. I was also writing that down, going, is that how you're supposed to spell it?
Apparently, the original.
The T H A N D I E was how I saw it in Mission Impossible 2.
Right? Yeah, it was an error at the first
really?
Role that she had, and she just rolled with it because she didn't want to fuck up her star status.
Wow.
And now she's big enough. She's like, no, my proper name is
Tando. Yep. So, yeah. All right.
They don't like her, but that's not a cool story. All right. My number three is the Academy Award winning film from 2022 for 2021. It's Coda.
Ooh!
Children of Deaf Adults.
I saw it too, and it's on my list, man.
Oh, it's coming up.
I know. Nice. Let's just talk about it.
Nice. We can talk about it together. This is heartwarming. It's a borderline musical, which is what amazes me.
I know. That's why I'm like, what the fuck, Paul?
But it happens in the context of the film. Yes, Paul is minded
because it is an audition which is set within the film.
People
yes.
singing. This follows, again, the young character who...
Yes, her name is Ruby.
Ruby, who is and has proper hearing.
And she's the only hearing member of a deaf family.
Of her family. So her parents both deaf. Her older brother's deaf. And she is their link to the world, right. In effect. So she's caught between their responsibility, or at least the pressure they put on her to allow her to communicate with the rest of the world, because they
so they can run their business,
fishing business,
yeah.
And the fact that she is a budding and talented singer,
mm-hmm.
and that's where her real passion lies, and that's the crux of the film.
Yeah, how can she relieve her family and
gets involved with her co-singer in a sort of pseudo way, which
I'll let boyfriend
play out in the film. But geez, she's talented.
Dude, let me tell you about this film, right? You told me about it and you told me that you liked it a while back, right? And then, okay, it wins the Oscar, right? I actually wasn't looking forward to watching it because I was like, I heard that you cry in this film and I didn't really want that bummer because I'm that guy. So I said, I'll just watch it anyway.
You can also happy cry.
That's it, Paul. This is a happy cry movie. Happy cry is great. Yeah. I love happy cry. That shit, when it crushes me in the way that makes me happy, oh, man.
You would love this.
That's cinema. That's what I love. I knew you would love
this because the struggling artist within.
Oh, dude, I love this fucking film. It's my number one, so fucking word
yeah,
up.
Yeah, of course right? it is.
So
fair enough.
I'm finding myself, I'm watching it, I'm writing notes. Like, I find myself laughing surprisingly a lot in this film. There's these singing lesson scenes where you hear her voice.
Yeah, her teacher is great in this movie.
So good, that guy. Whoever that guy is, he's so fucking... I should probably actually mention him.
I'll find his name. You continue.
Thank you. Now, when the scenes with her singing and with the dude and stuff, she has such a beautiful voice. And watching
Eugenio
her...
Eugenio DeBez.
What? Say it.
Eugenio DeBez.
Watching her fall in love in this film is well handled and great to watch. The parents are weird but charming in a way that allows you to like them even though they're...
Mostly him, not her. Dad's a much nicer guy.
Yeah, mum's a bit of a cunt, isn't she?
Yeah, mum's all Marley about Matlin. Fuck you. It's about what's good for us.
She does sort of... Yeah.
Eventually.
But like, you're right. And it was... You're right. But that makes the character more like deep. If you just... Like, I don't know. It's more interesting somehow. And the brother is... There's a scene with her and her brother where they're just signing to each other. Very complex because you're not quite sure if he's on her side or he just has problems with the fact that she's favored as the able-bodied child.
Exactly.
And it's really good. And it makes you, this is what I thought, it makes you value your hearing and appreciate.
Absolutely.
You appreciate that if you're blessed with being a relatively able-bodied person, you'll sit there and go, there's this one scene, I'll just tell you about, where the parents, not a spoiler, the parents go to the recital and they're watching.
This is a spoiler.
Oh.
Absolute spoiler.
Right, so, well, let me just say this.
30 seconds ahead.
Let me just say that. Yeah, 30 seconds ahead. And you see her singing and you hear it, and it's beautiful because she's such a great voice.
And they're watching her.
And they're watching, and then the camera goes behind her, and the focus racks from the stage to them in the foreground, and then the audio just cuts out. And then you're just like, and all you now hear what they hear.
But then she starts signing.
No, I'm talking about this is in the middle of the show, right? Because what happens is then, right? Yeah, they look around.
It's not an audition. Did you say a stage show?
Stage show, yeah, stage show, yeah. So they look around because you can hear that they can't hear anything. They're watching her sing and they're like, oh, I can be enchanted. What they do is they start looking at other people in the audience to see how they're reacting, and they're trying to feed the energy through those audiences, and it's like, they don't get to hear this.
Yeah, unlike other films like Green Book, no one's going to look back on this movie and go, not deserved.
No, this deserves the Oscar, bro. I was like, this is insane. And I was like, because you feel it so hard, I absolutely was like, okay, well, I haven't cried yet. And then at the end, I cry, right?
Yep.
Actually, no, 3 times at the end, I sort of cried. That's what it is. But it is beautiful / happy tear.
And I'm just going to go out this episode with the duet between her and the potential love interest,
yeah,
where they're just practicing at home.
Yes.
I can't remember what the name of the song is, but geez. What a great little just back and forth. He's playing the guitar.
Yeah, that's the
and she says, I can't look at you. They have to sing it back to back.
Because it's so nice, though.
Oh.
And this song appears a few times in the film, and you're happy to hear it each time. There's the...
You're All That I Need, I think is what it's called.
That's right. This is a... There's a movie called Once, which is...
Great film.
Great film, and it's rumored...
John Carney, I think.
John Carney, yes. And there's a scene in there where a guy is teaching a girl a song. And they play that song. That is known to be one of the best guy teaching some, learning a song scenes.
Yep.
This one here is up there because it's really, really cool. And it's just nice. And that girl, I love her. She's so charming. She's like, Amelia Jones. Fantastic.
It's odd to me that she didn't get a nomination.
I'm actually, because she's so talented.
Apparently she did not know sign language before. She's not a deaf.
She didn't know ASL before this. No. That's insane.
So she learned it for this film.
Wow.
And so she can sing. And she can do ASL.
No, she's triple threat.
She is amazing. So hats off.
I hope she has this wonderful career ahead of her.
Me too. Me absolutely too. So that's my three. Your number two, sir.
My number two is a film that I saw because of you, Paul, because you recommended it.
Oh, good.
The Lighthouse.
Yeah.
All right. Oh my God, people. All right. Woo! So does everyone know what The Lighthouse is? It's a black and white film. And it's about these two lighthouse keepers who go to this, like, fucking, the lighthouse, which is on an island, basically. And it's all completely fucking shut off from everything else. And he's supposed to, Robert Pattinson is supposed to assist the older lighthouse keeper, Willem Dafoe.
Yep.
As the day pass, things get weirder and weirder. And I gather from the film that I didn't know this walking in, that this is showing their descent into madness,
yes,
maybe.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay? And I didn't...
Potentially mermaids and craziness.
And you don't know whether it's a fucking vision.
But it's all
shot
4-3 and...
4-3
again. Robert Eggers.
4-3 again.
The director of The Northman and The Vavitch.
Now, that 4-3 thing really helps you feel boxed in.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because that's what it is. It's this thing. And
you're trapped on the island with these two dudes.
Well, this is... Exactly. Now, I heard shit... Like, people kept saying stuff like, this shit can't be unseen about this film, right? And I'm like, what does that mean? So I'm expecting an indie, and I'm getting it weird, slow burn. I get that. No dialogue for the first 7 minutes of the film. There's a jack-off scene that culminates in a fade to black with the sound effect of a splash. And I was like, what the hell is this, right?
Well, it's like, my life.
What? Well, it does fade to black occasionally. And then there's overhead jizz dripping, and there's a big fish mermaid fanny, and there's farts. A lot of farts in this film. And I was going, what the fuck's going on? Why is this is like obviously really well like revered.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's Willem Dafoe. It's both of their performances because that's all you have in this film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Willem Dafoe is nailing this old like beard shanty motherfucker, like just yelling, but he's really selling it. And I'm going, wow, that's amazing. And if you can stand the black and whiteness and the weird gross outness of it all, is it a tale worth sitting through? Absolutely, somehow. Because it's a really nasty, like, not nasty as in, like, it's just gross. Like, it's a gross film.
I think the word you're dancing around here from the early 1900s and the reason why it made my top 10 of the year 2 years ago list is it's so authentic. It feels so real and lived
in. Yeah, it does. Because you are grossed out when there's, like, shit and stuff happening. There's like balls of shit in his film.
You really feel for Robert Pattinson's character early on in the movie.
You do.
Because he's stuck with this asshole who knows so much more, but rather than just teaching him, is trying to impact everything with his awful lesson.
Making everything difficult.
And they have this antagonism, but then the moments where they kind of, particularly Defoe's character, softens towards Pattinson's character, you're like, okay, now they're starting to, oh no, that's just a sort of fake kind of moment. But the mystery also behind it, like, is it just their craziness or is there something more going on? It's also really intriguing. So this works.
Yeah, and then I read up on it. Like, it's like a whole, it actually is like the whole Prometheus, like, fucking mm-hmm. thing. Like, the whole story kind of reflects that kind of, that ancient shit. And I was thinking to myself, like, why is this good? And you're right, it's because it's authentic. Like, nothing looks like this. And this is, and you will be intrigued because you were bewildered.
And I think that's Eggers' trademark. This authenticity that he brings to the films that he directs.
That's probably a good call.
Even The Northman, right?
Yeah.
Even The Northman uh-huh. is another example of how authentic that time period feels versus something like Conan the Barbarian, which is great. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
But it's...
It looks like a movie. It looks like a produced movie.
And the way that it's strung together and whatever else, it's, you never really feel like you're back there. Whereas no. In his films, you do.
Well, I think if I had to characterize this, it is bleakly entertaining. Yeah, does that make sense?
That's nice.
Same with The Northman. It's bleakly entertaining.
Love The Northman. Yeah, you also really enjoy The Lighthouse. So
The Lighthouse.
Which one is better for you, The Lighthouse or The Northman?
Oh, The Lighthouse.
Okay, nice.
The Lighthouse. Yeah, good. Because it's not, The Northman was to me was a little boring. There was boring bits in it. Like I but The Lighthouse was, at no time were they trying
Sensibly talk about it. Two dudes who talk a lot.
That's the thing.
It's so much more inherently boring.
I'm expecting some rich story with The Northman, with like these, you know, like over generations, fucking like Viking motherfuckers and villages and shit. This is just two cunts in a lighthouse.
Yep.
So I expect it to be a little like this. Okay. So now I'm okay with it. You mean it's that? So The Lighthouse. I would recommend it if you like A24 productions, if you own a beret, if any of these things. Like, if you like this kind of shit, as long as you're up for it when you get in there, you'll walk away having been glad you saw it.
Fair enough.
There you go.
Okay, my number two is, and will be, I would not hesitate to say, the best animated film I've seen this year. And if it gets bettered in 2022, then hats off to whoever makes that film. It's called The Bad Guys.
What is it?
By Pierre Perefell. And this is based on an Australian author's work called The Bad Guys.
I have never heard of this.
Really?
Never heard of it.
No, I say really. I've got a kid. Why would you know?
Oh, is it a kid's film?
Yes. It's an animated film, CG animated film.
Wait, it's your number one?
No, it's my number two.
Oh, sorry, cunt.
Number two. I took my daughter to see it for her birthday. She was keen on it. There's 18 graphic novels, but they're just animated books in this series so far. I think Aaron, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
Some dude.
Yeah. He's planning 22 of them or 23 of them in the series. I read the first one the other day.
You read it?
Yeah. It's like, no, it took me 5.5 minutes to read.
Yeah, it's a kid's
book. Because it's like bugger all
lines.
And it's,
wait, you read it? What, to your daughter or just?
No, I picked it up because she got it from the library and I read it myself because I was that intrigued after reading.
What is it
this
about?
Film. So this film is basically, imagine Quentin Tarantino for a kid's film.
Very interesting. Go on.
It is Mr. Wolf, right, decides that he wants to be a good guy in the comics or in the graphic novels. But in this film, it explains why he decides he wants to be a good guy. And he drags Mr. Snake, Mr. Piranha, Mr. Jaws. They're not called Misters.
Yeah.
But they're wearing the black suits with the ties and whatever
else. Oh, wait. It really is.
And a tarantula.
Are they?
All these bad animals in a world where they mix with humans and they can all speak.
Yeah.
And they're renowned for being thieves and stealing shit and whatever else. And they turn over a leaf based on the input of this benevolent character.
Yeah.
And want to become good guys. And that's the whole film.
Really? I'm looking now at... I'm looking at the animation because my next question to you was, what does this look like?
Looks really cool.
It's really good.
It's a really nice kind
of... Very cartoony, but very...
Yeah, it's a mix between 3D animation and cartoony elements. Like, their eyes are kind of cartoony versus against 3D.
Look at this look at this wolf's awesome white suit.
Yeah.
That looks great.
And he's played by Wayne.
Who?
Prepare yourself to watch this movie.
What?
Sam Rockwell.
I just came. That's it. I just came. Does he dance? Okay.
Who's dancing for the
Oh my God! Like Sam Rockwell dancing? Because that's a sale.
I don't know. I can't speak to that.
Okay, well, I'll check it out and let you know. What a great suit.
It just nails the fact that it's going this target young audience, right? It just came out in America like the other day.
Really?
It came out here like 3-4 weeks ago because, again, the Australian influence, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And came out for the school holidays as well. This is a lot of fun. It's clever.
I'm genuinely intrigued.
It gets a bit silly towards the end with the threat that gets revealed, and you won't be too shocked by that threat, but It does have a genuinely cool cast and a genuinely cool bunch of characters, and you believe their arc, and the animation's great. And most importantly, I think, for a kids animated film, it's funny. It's funny repeatedly through the film. Like, there's a lot of ha ha ha. Not like rolling in the aisles funny, but like, yeah. That's clever, well played film.
I'm really intrigued. I will probably give it a go. There you go. Very nice. The bad guys. Actually, I saw this trailer and I didn't know anything about it. So the dude's in the car or whatever.
Of course, it's got Billie Eilish's song.
Is it? The bad I am so out of touch. I don't know that song. How's that?
That's right. You probably didn't recognize my rendition. It's okay.
No, sorry. I only saw a poster for it. I didn't even see a trailer. So there you go.
Well worth checking out. If you've got kids and you're like, oh God, what are we going to watch next? This one might, I hope, entertain you.
Nice. The bad guys.
Yep.
Well done. Well, my number, well.
It's okay. We've both bought our number ones.
Yeah, okay. Oh, really? Yes, we have. Holy shit, Paul. All right, fine. Well, let's just go through.
Run us through your 10 through 1 then, Wayne.
Okay. 10, Yakuza Apocalypse. 9, Death on the Nile. 8, The Bubble. 7, The French Dispatch. 6, Fresh. 5, West Side Story. 4, The Outfit. 3, All the Old Knives. 2, The Lighthouse. And my number one was Coda. And I just realized that Children of Deaf Adults, I think you told me this is what CODA stands for. Yeah. It does not mean epilogue, which is what I initially thought it was about. Or is it double meaning?
Well,
who knows? Because I guess it does have an epilogue, but so does every movie. Does
Yeah, okay. Possibly.
All right, that's fine.
Fair enough. My number 10 then is Deep Fucking Piece of Shit Water. 9, The Fucking Piece of Shit Bubble. 8, The Fucking Piece of Shit Finch.
You should have said The Shit Bubble.
Yeah, sure. 7, Jackass Forever. 6, Studio 666. 5, X. Gonna give it to you. Mm-hmm. 4, Overnight. 3, Coda. 2, The Bad Guys. My number 1 is unequivocally Fresh.
Fucking hell. This is your number 1, you asshole. What happened? Why is it so good?
Here's my review.
Bring it.
It's rare that a film surprises me. Very rare.
Oh, God.
Like, this caught me out of the blue.
Oh, I know what's going on here. You don't really like the film. You just like your review of it.
Well done, Mimi Kay.
What an asshole.
This is a hell of a feature film review. 4 stars, would eat here again.
You like your review, but you like the film, you cunt. I know how this is going.
Not true. I think this film is genuinely different than the normal. You hesitated to call it this. I'll give you this spoiler.
Bring it.
The credits happen 33 minutes into this movie. Did you notice that?
No, I did not notice that. Okay.
This film starts as one thing, absolutely romantic comedy.
Yeah.
And it transforms into, yes, I call it a horror film.
Yeah.
Certainly a thriller film
mm-hmm.
by the end of the movie. And the fact that it casts, as you said, Bucky mm-hmm. as the male lead, Sebastian Stan, in the movie, is really significant because he is a good actor.
I agree.
I didn't think he had much in him until I saw I, Tonya, and he plays the boyfriend in that film.
He does very well in Pam and Tommy. So again, well that is I can't watch him because
I've heard that from other people that he's by far the best thing about Pam and Tommy.
Oh, I actually think the girl, the way she looks, yeah, is amazing what they've done with her, and she's actually doing a great job too.
Oh, okay. All right.
As probably as good a job, honestly.
Okay, fair enough. I haven't watched it, so I can't comment beyond just a couple of things I've heard. Sebastian Stan, I think, is, to my mind, and this is a very limited understanding of acting, the more chameleon-esque you are, the better an actor you are, where you can't your instantly go, peak. You're that person. So the Gary Oldmans of the world can be Winston Churchill, and they can be something completely different.
Character actors, yeah.
Right? Whereas, and Sebastian Stan, I'll put into that category, because he was just Bucky for a long time for me.
Yes, and probably what was good about his performance, I would say, is that when the dual side, shall we say, of his personality is also believable, the way that he is. He's charming in the way that he's sadistic, like it's odd.
Yeah.
So it's.
But okay. I really want to stop talking about him now. I want to talk about
the girl.
Daisy Edgar-Jones is great.
Mm.
Very, very good in this film. But the real star of this film, I think, is the director, Mimi Cave.
Okay.
This is a very rare horror film from a female director, and it's written by a female as well.
I didn't know that.
Lauren Kahn. Both do a superb job, as far as I'm concerned, of turning certain stereotypes on their head. And to say what they are would be massive spoilers.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
So I would love to really emphasize why I love this movie so much, why it's so high on my list, why it's so high on my top 10 of the year.
Yeah, but I'm amazed.
But I can't do so without spoiling the film. So I just want to say, I gave you the 33-minute thing. That's it. Nothing more from me. But I was in on this film. I was so behind poor Noah. as the lead character. Mm. And I was so behind her friend who was trying to find her. They did that really, really well.
Yeah.
And I fucking hated Sebastian Stan in this movie.
Yeah, agree.
Just, it's so well cast, it's so well acted. But most importantly for me, I think it's so well put together in terms of its execution. Some of the montages in this movie are superb.
Really?
Some of the filmmaking.
I am so surprised. You like it that much, man. Wow. All right. Well, I guess it's a horror boy thing, I'm sure.
Yeah. Look, I even hesitate to call it a horror, but eventually it does get there, and I guess I don't need
it's
to
what
go.
You would, it's what you would, yeah. You would fall, might fall into that category as a result of, yeah.
I've been a bit harsh in previous years about what is it and what isn't a horror, and I've copped some shit for it. So, all right, fine. Fuck you all. I'm now carrying this film as a horror film, and that's why it's my number one this week and my top 10 last
horror 10, thriller for sure.
And Wayne's number six, I think, from memory.
I think so.
No!
Yeah, number six. Can't believe it's your number one, man. Boom. All right. Well, there you go. There's your surprise, everyone.
That is what you get from a top 10 lasted episode. Let's wrap it up then with what you had to say about some recent films that you've seen in the segment, which ends every show. It's called the Pop 10.
Talk about.
Pop 10.
Talk about.
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with David Powell, top level patron to the show and all around awesome dude, Uncharted. He said, I expect abject mediocrity. So what I asked the listeners to do was, tell us what you think you're going to expect from a film.
Yeah.
And then when you've watched it, tell us what you actually
very
got.
Very nice, very nice.
Something a little bit different. He said, expected subpar. He managed to fall well short. This is Hobbs and Shaw levels of shit. Absolute fucking garbage from start to finish in every respect.
Wow, I didn't hear that much.
Way closer than you to you on that, David, than Wayne was. Jonathan Lamb said, The Northman. Alexander Skarsgård taking the throne from Hemsworth as the new Norse sex god, but it's also going to be a freaking awesome and violent film. And then he said, definitely right about it. Skarsgård looks crazy ripped in it. However, I was slightly disappointed. The story felt a bit flat despite the premise of a Viking revenge tale. Overall, still a good movie.
Agree. That was my problem with it. Yeah.
Definitely more your speed than mine. Lee Allen Thomas said a film called Harriet. Cynthia Erivo will be terrific and the film will be pretty good. Yeah, I was right. It's a solid, well-made biopic with excellent performances. Erivo is wonderfully expressive and rocks a top hat.
Okay. Not heard of it.
Daniel Lowe said, be right back. Watching Miss Congeniality for the first time. I have no idea what it's about, but I expect it's your classic rom-com. Here we go.
Yeah, that should be interesting.
Okay, so I clearly guessed the plot/themes wrong. I thought the film was fun and Michael Caine was awesome.
Michael Caine.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Strangely, it has me a little bit excited for The Lost City.
Yeah, look, it's not for me, but I remember, I think I watched this at a hotel one time when I was on vacation somewhere.
I've never
seen it. And I'm like, ah, okay, sure.
Minhaka, aka Dan, said, going to watch Halloween 2018 with a child, 14-year-old, for the first time. I've seen the original, she hasn't, but I think all the good reviews are a good sign.
Damn.
Their response, I don't get the hype. There were no scares, no suspense, no humor, no good gore. Most of the kills happen off screen. Jamie Lee Curtis was great. But why is she walking around a dark house with a long gun and a flashlight to give her position away? 2 stars. I think people would just starve for a competently made legacy sequel. Speaking of, the granddaughter is such a useless character. Damn.
Yeah, fair enough. This movie suck.
No, you like the first one.
Yeah, it's all those Halloween, the first one. Okay.
Not kills.
Oh, okay.
Halloween.
Yeah, it's fine for what it is.
As I said to Mina, watch the second one then. Good luck to you, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Jason Barson, Whiplash. I'm prepared to be scared of J. Jonah Jameson. Not going to lie, I didn't watch Whiplash. I ended up watching a film called Fresh instead. And my review, Bucky's gone creepy.
Oh, you should have watched Whiplash, man. Oh, definitely.
Nicole Presley, wonderful patron to the show, said, backdating here, but as well 2 days ago, watched The Batman, and here is what was going through my mind before. Just holding a semi here, i.e. semi-interested, semi-not. After, very well done. Not sure why the hype is so intense, though. It wasn't that good. But I am excited for the sequel that just announced.
I'm kind of on board with that as well. Quick note, Bruce Wayne, if in the sequel we actually don't get a Bruce Wayne, because we didn't get one here. We only got Batman and Batman without a mask. If he develops a Bruce Wayne and he's learning that he has to be a foppish bachelor guy, that'll be a better movie. I bet you they don't
We
do
did
that.
Get a little bit of Bruce Wayne. He went to the funeral.
No, he didn't do shit. He's still talking like
but
this.
But that's my point. It wasn't a very good Bruce Wayne.
It wasn't a very good Batman, buddy. I'll tell you that. Because you know what?
Dude,
Batman in this film knocks on doors to get inside a nightclub. No. Batman, you smash through the ceiling. That's how you fucking get inside somewhere. Okay.
There you go.
Let's stop being such a normal guy. Go on.
There we are. Nick Horton said, El Gringo, a film we've not seen. It's Scott Adkins' movie, so it should be cheaply made, barely acted, cliche, barely shot martial arts action movie. Should be great.
And? It was all things I expected, except it wasn't great at all. Very strange filming, and think they were trying to be good, bag, ugly in the look. There are better Scott Adkins movies, One Shot, and all the ninja movies.
Word.
Christine said The Wolf of Snow Hollow. Prediction, uninspired gorefest. Review, quirky small town thriller that was well shot with solid acting, 3 out of 5.
Okay. Not heard of that one either. Damn, where do these movies come from? Shit.
Last three then. Paul Steed said Moonfall, expectation, cheesy, not very good disaster movie.
And?
Outcome. Well, they certainly made a disaster of a movie. Really bad. Yeah, so bad. Have I mentioned it was bad?
Yeah, piece of shit, that one.
Gear Crow said, sitting down to finally watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Ooh!
Expectation, gorgeous 60s Hollywood set pieces, biting dialogue, crazy as fuck action scenes, and most likely lots of feet.
Yes. I wonder how she liked it.
Edit after viewing, long ass movie, but so beautiful to watch. The acting stellar, and oh my God, Brad Pitt's abs and that ending. Wow.
Yeah. Remember the first time we saw this? I was kind of lukewarm on it. I'm like, it took too long. Saw it again, and it's such a better movie the second time. There you go.
Fair enough. Robert Fuller, last one. Here we go. After overdosing on Starbucks coffees, the review for Safety Not Guaranteed. The span of millennials solve societal problems and are ready to take on the world when they realize it's too much effort, really?
That's
way off, he said after watching it. It wasn't coffee but alcohol that prevailed as the drink of choice. Alas, they sought to discover themselves and their own meaning and place in the world. Where we're going, we don't need roads. So 3 stars primarily for cast being good.
Okay.
There we are.
I don't mind the show.
That's top 10. I haven't seen it. Have you seen it?
Yeah. No. Old ass movie, Safety Not Guaranteed, yeah, with Aubrey Plaza and Mark Duplass.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's really also very artsy-fartsy twee kind of movie.
I'm into that one. I wouldn't mind seeing it. Oh, that's it for your feedback. Thank you so much, everyone. Go back to us. Sorry we couldn't get to you. Wayne, how do the listeners get to us and feedback on the show?
Google The Countdown Podcast or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com. I'm sure I'll get to that website real
you
soon.
You can also fucking mention the website. Countdownpodcast.com. It's got all the links to everything you need, including our fucking Gmail.
Fucking Gmail.
Follow us on Podbean where we host and check out the Facebook community links in the show notes. Wayne, what's happening next week as a final aside for episode 371 of The Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast.
Thanks for the vamping, Paul. Next week, we're going to do the MCU ranked.
That's it. Doctor Strange comes out next week. So we are going to rank every MCU film from shittest to best.
That's right.
So it's not going to be a top 10. It's going to be 28, I think, 27, yeah, whatever we'll it is just by punch that stage.
Yeah.
And we'll be very quick. We're just going to go through them and we're going to find out where we think things fall.
That's actually a mammoth task. Very interesting.
You don't have to watch anything else again. That's a good part.
No, that's cool. It's an interesting
except
idea.
Except on Strange, of course.
Of course.
In the multiverse of madness. And that is it for us today. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been an absolute pleasure to come to you again and give you some films to recommend and also to avoid. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Fuck. We have not contributed anything to society this day.
What the fuck is this shit?
You can't roll shit back at me, back a motherfucker. No one knows what's going on. You're a cunt.
Catch you next week. See ya. I will go where you lead, always there in time of need. And when I lose my will, you'll be there to push me off the hill. There's no looking back for us. We got love, sure enough, that's enough. You're all that I